Chapter 63. 2 years since my uncle died, leaving me a pretty estate in the county of Kent, and being at Tunbridge Wells last summer, after my mourning was over, and on the lookout, if truth must be told, for some young lady who would share with me the solitude of my great Kentish house, and be kind to my tenantry, for whom a woman can do a great deal more good than the best-intentioned man can. I was greatly fascinated by a young lady of London, who was the toast of all the company at the Wells. Everyone knows Saccharissa's beauty, and I think, Mr. Spectator, no one better than herself. My table book informs me that I danced no less than 27 sets with her at the assembly. I treated her to the fiddles twice. I was admitted on several days to her lodging, and received by her with a great deal of distinction, and, for a time, was entirely her slave. It was only when I found, from common talk of the company at the Wells, and from narrowly watching one, who I once thought of asking the most sacred question a man can put to a woman, that I became aware how unfit she was to be a country gentleman's wife, and that this fair creature was but a heartless worldly jilt, playing with affections, that she never meant to return, and, indeed, incapable of returning them. 'Tis admiration such women want, not love that touches them, and I can conceive, in her old age, no more wretched creature than this lady will be, when her beauty hath deserted her, when her admirers have left her, and she hath neither friendship nor religion to console her. Business calling me to London, I went to St. James Church last Sunday, and there opposite me sat my beauty of the Wells. Her behavior during the whole service was so pert, languishing, and absurd. She flirted her fan, and ogled and eyed me in a manner so indecent, that I was obliged to shut my eyes, so as actually not to see her, and whenever I opened them beheld hers, and very bright they are, still staring at me. I fell in with her afterwards at court, and at the playhouse, and here nothing would satisfy her, but she must elbow through the crowd, and speak to me, and invite me to the assembly, which she holds at her house, not very far from CHRNGCRSS. Having made her a promise to attend, of course I kept my promise, and found the young widow in the midst of a half dozen of card tables, and a crowd of wits and admirers. I made the best bow I could, and advanced towards her, and saw by a peculiar puzzled look in her face, though she tried to hide her perplexity, that she had forgotten even my name. Her talk, artful as it was, convinced me that I had guessed aright. She turned the conversation most ridiculously upon the spelling of names and words, and I replied with as ridiculous fulsome compliments as I could pay her. Indeed, one in which I compared her to an angel visiting the sick Wells, went a little too far, nor should I have employed it, but that the allusion came from the second lesson last Sunday, which we both had heard, and I was pressed to answer her. Then she came to the question, which I knew was awaiting me, and asked how I spelt my name. Madam, apostrophe says I, turning on my heel, I spell it with a Y apostrophe apostrophe, and so I left her, wondering at the light-heartedness of the town people, who forget and make friends so easily, and resolved to look elsewhere for a partner for your constant reader, Simon Wilditz. You know my real name, Mr. Spectator, in which there is no such a letter as Upsilon. But if the lady, whom I have called Saccharissa, wonders that I appear no more at the tea tables, she is hereby respectfully informed the reason why. The above is a parable, whereof the writer will now expound the meaning. Jocasta was no other than Miss Esmond, maid of honor to Her Majesty. As he had told Mr. Esmond this little story of having met a gentleman somewhere, and forgetting his name, when the gentleman, with no such malicious intentions as those of Eamon in the above fable, made the answer simply as above, and we all laughed to think how little Mistress Jocasta Beatrix had profited by her artifice and precautions. As for Simon, he was intended to represent the oars and her very humble servant, the writer of the apologue, and of this story, which we had printed on a Spectator paper at Mr. Steele's office, exactly as those famous journals were printed, and which was laid on the table at breakfast in place of the real newspaper. Mistress Jocasta, who had plenty of wit, could not live without her Spectator to her tea. And this sham Spectator was intended to convey to the young woman that she herself was a flirt, and that Simon was a gentleman of honor and resolution, seeing all her faults, and determined to break the chains once and forever. For though enough hath been said about this love business already enough, at least, to prove to the writer's heirs what a silly fond fool their old grandfather was, who would like them to consider him as a very wise old gentleman. Yet not near all has been told concerning this matter, which, if it were allowed to take in Esmond's journal the space it occupied in his time, would weary his kinsmen and women of a hundred years' time beyond all endurance, and form such a diary of folly and driveling, raptures and rage, as no man of ordinary vanity would like to leave behind him. The truth is, that, whether she laughed at him or encouraged him, whether she smiled or was cold, and turned her smiles on another, worldly and ambitious, as he knew her to be, hard and careless, as she seemed to grow with her court life, and a hundred admirers that came to her and left her, Esmond, do what he would, never could get Beatrix out of his mind, thought of her constantly at home or away. If he read his name in a gazette, or escaped the shot of a cannonball, or a greater danger in the campaign, as has happened to him more than once, the instant thought after the honor achieved or the danger avoided, was, what will she say of it? Ill this distinction or the idea of this peril later or touch her, so as to be better inclined towards me. He could no more help this passionate fidelity of temper than he could help the eyes he saw with one or the other seemed a part of his nature, and knowing every one of her faults as well as the keenest of her detractors, and the folly of an attachment to such a woman, of which the fruition could never bring him happiness for above a week, there was yet a charm about this source from which the poor deluded gentleman could not free himself, and for a much longer period than Ulysses, another middle-aged officer, who had traveled much, and been in the foreign wars, Esmond felt himself enthralled and besotted by the wiles of this enchantress. Quit her. He could no more quit her, as the Simon of this story was made to quit his false one, than he could lose his consciousness of yesterday. She had but to raise her finger, and he would come back from ever so far, as he had but to say I have discarded such and adorer, and the poor infatuated wretch would be sure to come, and rode her about her mother's house, willing to be put on the ranks of suitors, though he knew he might be cast off the next week. If he were like Ulysses in his folly, at least she was in so far like Penelope, that as he had a crowd of suitors, and undid day after day and night after night the handiwork of fascination, and the web of coquetry with which she was wont to allure and entertain them. Part of her coquetry may have come from her position about the court, where the beautiful maid of honor was the light about which a thousand beaux came and fluttered, where she was sure to have a ring of admirers round her, crowding to listen to her repartees as much as to admire her beauty, and where she spoke and listened to much free talk, such as one never would have thought the lips or ears of Rachel Castlewood's daughter would have uttered or heard. When in waiting at Windsor or Hampton, the court ladies and gentlemen would be making riding parties together, Mrs. Beatrix in a horseman's coat and hat, the foremost after the stag hounds, and over the park fences, a crowd of young fellows at her heels. If the English country ladies at this time were the most pure and modest of any ladies in the world, the English town and court ladies permitted themselves words and behavior that were neither modest nor pure, and claimed, some of them, a freedom which those who love that sex most would never wish to grant them. The gentlemen of my family that follow after me, for I don't encourage the ladies to pursue any such studies, may read in the works of Mr. Congreve and Dr. Swift and others, what was the conversation, and what the habits of our time. the most beautiful woman in England in 1712, when Esmond returned to this country, a lady of high birth, and though of no fortune to be sure, with 1,000 fascinations of wit and manners. Beatrix Esmond was now 26 years old, and Beatrix Esmond still. Of her 100 adorers he had not chosen one for a husband, and those who had asked had been jilted by her, and more still had left her. A succession of near 10 years' crops of beauties had come up since her time, and had been reaped by proper husbandmen, if we may make an agricultural simile, and had been housed comfortably long ago. Her own contemporaries were sober mothers by this time, girls with not a tithe of her charms, or her wit, having made good matches, and now claiming precedence over the spinster who, but lately had derided and outshone them. The young beauties were beginning to look down on Beatrix as an old maid, and sneer, and call her one of Charles II. Apostrophe yes ladies, and ask whether her portrait was not in the Hampton Court Gallery? But still she reigned, at least in one man's opinion, superior over all the little misses, that were the toasts of the young lads, and in Esmond's eyes was ever perfectly lovely and young. Who knows how many were nearly made happy by possessing her, or, rather, how many were fortunate in escaping this siren. 'Tis a marvel to think that her mother was the purest and simplest woman in the whole world, and that this girl should have been born from her. I am inclined to fancy, my mistress, who never said a harsh word to her children and, but twice or thrice only to one person, must have been too fond and pressing with the maternal authority. For her son and her daughter both revolted early, nor after their first flight from the nest, could they ever be brought back quite to the fond mother's bosom. Lady Castlewood, and perhaps it was as well, knew little of her daughter's life and real thoughts. How was she to apprehend what passes in Queen's antechambers, and at court tables? Mrs. Beatrix asserted her own authority so resolutely, that her mother quickly gave in. The maid of honor had her own equipage, went from home, and came back at her own will. Her mother was alike powerless to resist her, or to lead her, or to command, or to persuade her. As he had been engaged once, twice, thrice, to be married, Esmond believed. When he quitted home, it hath been said, she was promised to my Lord Ashburnham, and now, on his return, behold his lordship was just married to Lady Mary Butler, the Duke of Ormond's daughter, and his fine houses, and 12,000 a year of fortune, for which Miss Beatrix had rather coveted him, was out of her power. To her Esmond, could say nothing in regard to the breaking of this match, and, asking his mistress about it, all Lady Castlewood answered was colon do not speak to me about it, Harry. I cannot tell you how or why they parted, and I fear to inquire. I have told you before that with all her kindness, and wit, and generosity, and that sort of splendor of nature as he has, I can say but little good of poor Beatrix, and look with dread at the marriage she will form. Her mind is fixed on ambition only, and making a great figure, and, this achieved, she will tire of it as she does of everything. Heaven help her husband, whoever he shall be. My Lord Ashburnham was a most excellent young man, gentle and yet manly, of very good parts, so they told me, and as my little conversation would enable me to judge. And a kind temper, kind and enduring I'm sure he must have been, from all that he had to endure. But he quitted her at last, from some crowning piece of caprice or tyranny of hers. And now he has married a young woman that will make him 1,000 times happier than my poor girl ever could. The rupture, whatever its cause was, I heard the scandal, but indeed shall not take pains to repeat at length in this diary the trumpery coffee house story, caused a good deal of low talk, and Mr. Esmond was present at my lord's appearance at the birthday with his bride, over whom the revenge that Beatrix took was to look so imperial and lovely that the modest downcast young lady could not appear beside her, and Lord Ashburnham, who had his reasons for wishing to avoid her, slunk away quite shamefaced, and very early. This time His Grace the Duke of Hamilton, whom Esmond had seen about her before, was constant at Miss Beatrix's side. He was one of the most splendid gentlemen of Europe, accomplished by books, by travel, by long command of the best company, distinguished as a statesman, having been ambassador in King William's time, and a noble speaker in the Scots Parliament, where he had led the party that was against the Union, and though now 45 years of age, a gentleman so high in stature, accomplished in wit, and favored in person, that he might pretend to the hand of any princess in Europe. Should you like the Duke for a cousin? Says Mr. Secretary St. John, whispering to Colonel Esmond in French. It appears that the widower consoles himself. But to return to our little Spectator paper, and the conversation which grew out of it. Miss Beatrix at first was quite bit, as the phrase of that day was, and did not mote the authorship of the story. Indeed, Esmond had tried to imitate as well as he could Mr. Steele's manner. As for the other author of The Spectator, his prose style I think is altogether inimitable, and Dick, who was the idlest and best-natured of men, would have let the piece pass into his journal and go to posterity as one of his own lucubrations, but that Esmond did not care to have a lady's name whom he loved sent forth to the world in a light so unfavorable. Beatrix pished and sawed over the paper, Colonel Esmond watching with no little interest her countenance as she read it. How stupid your friend Mr. Steele becomes, cries Miss Beatrix. Epsom and Tunbridge. Will he never have done with Epsom and Tunbridge, and with Bow Church, and Jocastas and Lindamiras? Why does he not call women Nellie and Betty, as their godfathers and godmothers did for them in their baptism? Beatrix. Beatrix. Says her mother, speak gravely of grave things. Mama thinks the church catechism came from heaven, I believe, says Beatrix, with a laugh, and was brought down by a bishop from a mountain. Oh, how I used to break my heart over it. Besides, I had a popish godmother, Mama. Why did you give me one? I gave you the Queen's name, says her mother blushing. And a very pretty name it is, said somebody else. Beatrix went on reading, spell my name with a YY, you wretch, says she, turning round to Colonel Esmond. You have been telling my story to Mr. Steele, or stop, you have written the paper yourself to turn me into ridicule. For shame, sir. Poor Mr. Esmond felt rather frightened, and told a truth, which was nevertheless an entire falsehood. "'Pon my honor," says he, "I have not even read The Spectator of this morning." Nor had he, for that was not The Spectator, but a sham newspaper put in its place. She went on reading. Her face rather flushed as she read. "'Oh," she says, "I think you couldn't have written it. I think it must have been Mr. Steele, when he was drunk and afraid of his horrid vulgar wife. Whenever I see an enormous compliment to a woman, and some outrageous panegyric about female virtue, I always feel sure that the captain and his better half have fallen out overnight, and that he has been brought home tipsy, or has been found out in Beatrix," cries the Lady Castlewood. "Well, Mama, do not cry out before you are hurt. I am not going to say anything wrong. I won't give you more annoyance than you can help, you pretty kind Mama. Yes, and your little Trix is a naughty little Trix, and she leaves undone those things which she ought to have done, and does those things which she ought not to have done, and there's well now I won't go on. Yes, I will, unless you kiss me." And with this the young lady lays aside her paper, and runs up to her mother, and performs a variety of embraces with her ladyship, saying as plain as eyes could speak to Mr. Esmond here, sir, would not you like to play the very same pleasant game? Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.